Welcome to Food for Thought, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Listen now as your host, Jolie Root, sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. And now, here's your host, Jolie Root.
Hello, and welcome to Food for Thought. I've got some interesting health news this week to share with you and a big show ahead, so grab a cup of tea or some iced tea and settle in, because most of us want to learn how to lose weight, and there are some little tricks that some of us can employ that can help us shave off some of those unwanted pounds. That's not the whole show today. I've got a new kind of fish oil to talk about, and particularly if you've ever taken a fish oil supplement and it raised your cholesterol, this is going to be interesting for you, because there's a new approach that won't and will give you a bunch of other benefits. I'm going to launch into that discussion today too, and some similarities between people and mice. One study pointed out, and we'll talk about that, and the benefit of getting enough sleep. So lots of good stuff ahead, but for starters, overweight is a huge problem, and no pun intended, in our culture. There are a couple of dietary supplements that you want to know about if you're looking to shed some pounds. One of them is called alpha-lipoic acid. It's an antioxidant. It's something that you can take to raise your internal glutathione levels. Glutathione is a master antioxidant in the body that helps us shed pollutants and toxins. For example, if you accidentally took too much Tylenol, acetaminophen, all of us know that some of these painkillers can be pretty toxic to the liver and other organs in the body, and acetaminophen is right up there when it comes to liver damage with alcohol and with other types of medications that can just trash your liver. If you wanted to get rid of excess acetaminophen in your system, boosting glutathione production is one of the ways to do that. And that's what alpha-lipoic acid does, and it can even be used in emergency medicine for people that have Tylenol poisoning in emergency rooms. But alpha-lipoic acid is also available as a supplement. You take somewhere between 100 and 300 milligrams a day in order to improve liver function. Well, it does else, and it does it really well if it's combined with the long-chain omega-3 eicosapentaenoic acid, or EPA. And what they do together is promote body weight loss in overweight people, in obese people, and in overweight people who are on a reduced calorie diet. This was a study from Spain. Alpha-lipoic acid supplements enhanced weight loss, and this was published in the journal Obesity. And adding EPA to alpha-lipoic acid actually countered reductions in the satiety hormone leptin. And that hormone declines when we're losing weight. So people that are on diets feel hungrier than they do when they're not on the diet, not because they're so much starving for calories, but because hormonally things are a little askew. And this hormone leptin that makes us feel full, that makes us feel satisfied with the food that we're eating, drops when we start to control caloric intake. And we feel hungrier. So what they found, and this was at the University of Navarra in Spain, what they found was that 300 milligrams a day of alpha-lipoic acid promotes the weight loss, promotes fat mass reduction in obese women. This was a study with women. And adding the fish oil EPA, the fatty acid EPA, it didn't increase the reduction of fat mass, but it prevented the decline of leptin during the weight loss. So boosting satisfaction with a fewer number of calories is a way that alpha-lipoic acid works, but also helping to reduce body weight and fat with a dietary supplement. Now, the alpha-lipoic acid was 300 milligrams a day, the dose. The EPA was 1,300 milligrams a day, and it was EPA only. I'll be talking about EPA only a little bit more today as well. The weight loss was the same, right around 11 pounds. And the combination of EPA and lipoic acid bumped people up to about 14 pounds, which is nice, between 14 and 16 pounds. But the leptin levels decreased in the alpha lipoic acid group, but EPA together with alpha lipoic acid preserved leptin levels, so people felt full even though they were eating fewer calories. And that's one of the reasons why people fall off of diets, is they just say, I can't do it, I feel hungry all the time, and then I lose control and I really binge. So preserving leptin is a function of EPA, the long chain omega-3. That's really good news. Now, other news in sleep medicine. This was in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's a neuroscience study. They found common molecules signifying disturbed metabolism in response to sleep restriction. And they did metabolic profiling on laboratory animals, but also humans. And they found that there's an overall shift in the way that lipids are metabolized. And also there's evidence of systemic oxidative stress when members of both species, mice and humans, have decreased sleep. So oxidative stress is a very important factor in metabolic diseases like prediabetes, diabetes, obesity. Lipid metabolism obviously has implications for cardiovascular disease as well as obesity and diabetes. So one of the factors is sleep drives metabolic clearance, and it's a reparative process at the metabolic level. So the impact of sleep restriction on circadian biology is really relevant, and the metabolic balance needs to be preserved throughout the circadian cycle, the sleeping-waking cycle. But it's just really important for us to understand that neurotransmitters, gut metabolites, and other metabolic compounds in the body are perturbed when we don't get the sleep that we need, when sleep is interrupted. So this brings up the problem of all of our use of electronics, the heavy dependence on our cell phones and our computer screens, and being sort of addicted, if you will, to being online constantly, because a lot of people later in the evening have got a screen, an electronic screen, even digital readers that they're using, and that disrupts the melatonin cycle. Melatonin is the hormone of darkness. It's the hormone that governs our sleep cycles, and when it gets disrupted, we stay awake later at night. Our sleeping patterns are disturbed, and there are some very serious real world consequences to having sleeping patterns be disturbed. In studies that have looked at night workers, people who work the overnight shift, whether it's law enforcement or medicine or people that work in the hospitality industry, for whatever reason, people that work an overnight shift are at a much higher risk for reproductive cancers, breast cancer in women. They did a study in women that were air traffic controllers and found much higher rates of breast cancer in people whose day and night existence pattern was disrupted. We're supposed to be awake during sunlight, and we're supposed to sleep when it's dark. So when we disrupt the pattern of darkness in the room where we're sleeping by having screens, by having a television, by having the computer screens, the e-readers, the cell phone, it disrupts melatonin production and circadian rhythm. So this is problematic and just something that we need to caution ourselves about this. When we process foods in our diet, we make compounds like oxalic acid and dialkylglycerol, and that shows that we're actually processing our foods. The dialkylglycerol is a precursor to triglycerides. That's a molecule in which fat is stored in the body, but it also has a role. It functions in cell signaling. And so they found that these compounds were depleted in people who had sleep restriction, and that would disrupt people, metabolically speaking. So mechanistic answers about the metabolic effects of sleep is what I'm talking about here, and the importance of getting a good night's sleep. So melatonin might be a tool that you would use for that. In my family, I also really advocate the use of magnesium in the evening. Magnesium is the mineral that balances calcium, and a lot of people have excessive calcium intake, not so much from the foods, although some people do, but from antacids. People who do the Tums or the chewable Alka-Seltzer, those are calcium carbonate, usually around 750 milligrams or so. And some people have repetitive heartburn from eating too late at night, from being overweight with central obesity. And so reflux is very uncomfortable. And they're chewing these things. And that just puts an excessive amount of calcium in the body. That disrupts magnesium. And magnesium is necessary for calming the central nervous system and relaxing the muscles. So in addition to recommending melatonin to my friends and family members that might have a little bit of trouble sleeping at night, I also recommend magnesium in the evening. It's great for your heart, for starters. It's very important for a healthy heart. It's involved in hundreds of different enzymatic and metabolic functions in the body, but it is chiefly and primarily a wonderful muscle relaxer. So if you carry tension in your shoulders, in your neck, tightness in the upper back, and have pain in your back when you're sleeping, if you get leg cramps when you're sleeping, magnesium is for you. And so I recommend a chelated magnesium. The best one, the one that I like the best, is magnesium glycinate. Take 200 milligrams. I would take two of those in the evening time and maybe one during the day. It doesn't make you sleepy, but it relaxes your muscles, and muscle tension sometimes disrupts sleep for people. Another thing you can do to boost weight loss is drink green tea before you turn in for the night. So drinking green tea before bedtime helps you burn calories while you're sleeping and helps to prevent weight gain. A little trick for you. This is Food for Thought. I'm your host, nurse and nutritionist Jolie Root, and we'll be back after these messages. Stay with me.
Carlson for Kids Chewable DHA is a fun and tasty way to provide your child with the nourishing benefits of DHA omega-3 oil. DHA is vital for healthy brain and vision development in growing children. Carlson for Kids Chewable DHA is bursting with orange flavor. And each chewable soft gel supplies 100 milligrams of DHA. You can give your children Carlson for Kids Chewable DHA with confidence because all Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Look for the purity guarantee right on the label. Get your Carlson for Kids Chewable DHA from your favorite natural food store today. Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gelatin capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today. Or go to CarlsonLabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root. There's been a lot of discussion about vitamin E in the last decade, and vitamin E, a classic nutrient, very important for the normal development of nerve cells. It's actually impossible for the nervous system to develop completely without vitamin E. Nerve damage results when people have inadequate levels of vitamin E, and we do. Nutrition surveys show that 90% of Americans don't get the daily value of vitamin E, never mind optimal levels of vitamin E. There's no controversy that vitamin E is protective for the heart. There was some drummed up attempts at creating controversy around that conversation, and pharmaceutical researchers sometimes like to attack dietary supplements because dietary supplements work well, are safe, are inexpensive, and mess up the business for certain drugs. And vitamin E was the target of just such an attack several years ago. But the most recent analysis shows that vitamin E protects the heart, reduces the risk of dying from heart disease by about 20%. The Women's Health Initiative actually found a 49% reduction in risk of dying from heart disease in women who had been on vitamin E for 10 years and were 65 years of age or older. But this one that I want to talk about today, this new story about vitamin E that was just published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, found that a lot of people in North America are probably compromised with vitamin E, even if they're taking vitamin E, because they have disrupted lipid values, because they have elevated cholesterol or elevated triglycerides. Because it turns out that elevated cholesterol and triglycerides can keep vitamin E from reaching body tissues. So what they're saying is that just measuring blood levels of vitamin E offers a distorted picture of whether or not the person has adequate amounts of the vitamin, and that also in previous methods of estimating tissue levels are flawed, because that number, more than 90% of the people in the United States that don't take supplements lack the recommended amount of vitamin E in their diet, is very troubling. Vitamin E, as I mentioned, nerves, it's very important, but it's very important in places like the artery walls, in our brain, in the liver, in the eyes and skin, and it's essential in just about every tissue in the body. Vitamin E is a fat-soluble antioxidant. It plays very important roles in scavenging free radicals and supporting healthy neurologic function. In the diet, it's most commonly obtained from cooking oils, from nuts, and from some vegetables. So we're looking at this truth that inadequate vitamin E intake is a societal problem. I talk about vitamin D quite often being an epidemic of deficiency, but I think that we've got the same situation going on with vitamin E, and this is particularly concerning about people that are overweight, obese, or who have metabolic syndrome. People with elevated lipids in their blood plasma are facing increased inflammation as a result of the elevated cholesterol and triglycerides. Almost every tissue in the body is under oxidative attack when that elevated inflammation is active. And that means that the body needs more vitamin E. But the vitamin E that's needed to protect the tissues is stuck in the bloodstream. It's going around and around, almost like you're stuck on a freeway and you can't find the exit. So they did a tagging of collard greens, which happens to be a great source of vitamin E. Oh, I've got them growing in my garden right now. I do love them. They didn't find differences in absorption between age or gender, but there was a marked difference in how long vitamin E stayed in the bloodstream based on elevated cholesterol and triglycerides. So if you have elevated cholesterol and triglycerides. You want to get a handle on your triglycerides and cholesterol in order to let vitamin E protect your body from inflammation and oxidative stress. Vitamin E in doses up around 600 to 800 units per day is an anti-inflammatory. It itself is a direct anti-inflammatory. It drops C-reactive protein levels by half in about 6 weeks' time if you take enough of it. And it protects your LDL from oxidation and your HDL from oxidation. And those are very, very important functions for the health of your body. So vitamin E is an important nutrient, and getting your lipids under control, not being unaware that you might have elevated cholesterol and elevated triglycerides, is something that is particularly risky in today's culture. And a lot of people do have poor lipid management. Now, a lot of people take statins, the cholesterol-lowering medications, and I'm not altogether opposed to that. I think if your numbers are off, that statins can make sense, particularly if there's a strong family history of heart disease or you yourself have heart disease that you are aware of, then we know that statins are helpful. How do you boost the benefit of statins, though? How can you maybe even take a lower dose of statins? Because we all know the statins have a side effect. One of the primary ones is muscle pain. There's also sometimes some joint pain. Part of that is a weakening of the muscles because statins deplete coenzyme Q10, another fat-soluble antioxidant that protects cholesterol from oxidizing but is also necessary for the production of energy. And when we annihilate CoQ10 with medications, then we feel less energetic, but particularly our muscles are less energetic, and it even weakens the heart. You don't want that. So hint, if you're taking cholesterol-lowering medications, you want to take coenzyme Q10, 100 to 300 milligrams a day, in order to offset the harm from the statins weakening and damaging muscles. But we also, with statins, need to be thinking about omega-3s. And in particular, the EPA-only approach is very, very helpful for people for whom, when they took fish oils, they saw an increase in cholesterol. Now, doctors put people on fish oils in order to protect the heart, protect the circulation and blood vessels, and, you know, P.S., benefits for the brain, the eyes, reducing inflammation everywhere in the body. But a lot of the physicians that put people on fish oils are cardiologists or lipid doctors that are managing elevated triglycerides and cholesterol and managing heart risk. And contrary to what is expected in some groups of people, and particularly people who have very high cholesterol and very high triglycerides, adding fish oils raises the cholesterol, and that really troubles the lipid doctors and it really troubles cardiologists. But there's a study that tells us how to avoid this that dates back. It's called the Japan EPA Lipid Intervention Study, JELIS, J-E-L-I-S. And in that study, they used EPA only. When you take fish oils, you've got two long-chain fatty acids that are coming in that supplement. One is EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid. The other one is DHA. If you separate them and just take an EPA supplement, it offsets that cholesterol elevation. Then when you just take the EPA, it actually lowers total cholesterol, LDL, it lowers C-reactive protein, it lowers things like VLDL, and EPA alone, just like EPA with DHA, can dramatically lower triglyceride levels. And a lot of lipid doctors and lipid specialists, cardiologists, are concerned that elevated triglycerides might even be more harmful than elevated cholesterol. But the cool thing about the EPA-only approach, if your lipids are out of whack, is that you get an across-the-board benefit. You don't get the cholesterol elevation. You actually get a cholesterol reduction. You get triglyceride reduction. You get VLDL, the very low density lipoproteins. Those are particularly damaging to blood vessels. You get reductions in those. You get reductions in VLDL triglyceride, reductions in inflammatory markers. And you also get an antioxidant benefit. Oddly enough, EPA inserts itself right into cell membranes, cells of every type, and it stabilizes them against oxidative stress. And as I was saying when I was talking about the vitamin E, people who have elevated triglycerides and elevated cholesterol have rampant inflammation in the body, and EPA is a potent anti-inflammatory. But they also have increased levels of oxidative stress, and those oxidation products can be measured. And in studies, the Marine study, the Anchor study, where they looked at EPA by itself, they actually found that EPA is a very potent antioxidant, and it even inhibited the damage from high sugar intake. When people eat excessive sugar or excessive carbohydrate, there's a glucose-induced change in the cell membranes, and cholesterol crystalline domains form. That sounds technical, but it's just a very stiff area in the cell membrane. And in the studies that looked at EPA by themselves, just EPA rather than EPA plus DHA, the EPA inhibited that sugar damage. What happens when sugar damages the body? It's called glycation from glucose. It's a glycemic attack, if you will, on tissues and organs and structure in the body. And in the studies with people that had these really elevated lipids, who, these are heart disease people, that were taking EPA only, I'll tell you how much in a second, that glycation was blocked by the fish oil compound, EPA. So, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, blocking the damage from glycation, but also supporting the benefit of the statins and undoing some of the damage of the statins. That's what the EPA did. In the JELIS trial, the people that added EPA to statins had double the benefit. And in the Marine and Anchor trial, all the lipids responded to the EPA-only approach. So if fish oils raise your cholesterol, EPA-only, Carlson makes it. They just released it. It's called Elite EPA Gems. And you take 4,000 milligrams a day, four capsules. We'll be right back with more Food for Thought right after these messages.
Concerned about diabetes? Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes is a unique formula containing nutrients that support the health of individuals with diabetes or pre-diabetes. Two easy-to-swallow soft gels supply over 25 nutrients, including important omega-3s from fish oil. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes supports a healthy heart, brain, and nerves, healthy vision, and healthy circulation. Ask for Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes at finer health food stores today. Or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes. Ask for it today. Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. And most American diets are low in important omega-3 oils. Omega-3 oils are the vital components of fish that provide numerous health benefits. Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems supply concentrated amounts of these omega-3 oils that are needed to support vision, brain function, and a healthy heart. Each great-tasting Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gem soft gel contains 1,250 milligrams of fish oil from deep, cold-water fish. That supplies a full 800 milligrams of omega-3s, all in only one easy-to-swallow soft gel. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence for they are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Ask for Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems at your favorite natural food retailer today.
This is Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Rood. I'm a nurse and nutritionist. You can keep up with me in between radio programs by visiting my blog, Red Wine, Green Tea, and Dark Chocolate. It's easier to find than that, though. Just JolieBlogs, JolieBlogs.com. That's where the blog is. I'm on Twitter. I am Jolie Rood on Twitter. And Food for Thought has a Facebook page, Food for Thought Radio, so you can find me on Facebook also. And, you know, keep up with some health information and ways to be healthy on the days that I'm not on the air. Are you a lover of salt? If you are, you need to be careful, and not just because of blood pressure, because research has been published that shows that salt affects much more than just blood pressure. This came from the University of Delaware. It was a review paper. Even in the absence of an increase in blood pressure, excess sodium can adversely affect target organs, including the blood vessels, the heart, the kidneys, and the brain. So this is something to be concerned about. You might think you're a lucky person. You can eat all the salty snacks and convenience foods you want, and you still have low numbers when you put on a blood pressure cuff, but you want to be careful. Because looking at the heart and looking at the kidneys, excess sodium is a problem. This paper was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, and the blood pressure responses to alterations in sodium vary widely. The concept of salt-sensitive blood pressure exists. Classify whether or not you are that person, but if your blood pressure increases during a period of high intake of salt or decreases during a low sodium period, then you're considered salt sensitive. If you don't have changes in blood pressure with sodium restriction, you're considered salt resistant. But sodium is still bad news for the body one way or the other, because excessive sodium influences the arteries, reducing function of the endothelium, that's the inner lining of the blood vessels. And that lining, the endothelial cells, they govern a number of processes, including clotting and platelet adhesion and immune function. And when we take in more than we should in terms of salt, it increases arterial stiffness. So excessive salt intake can impair the dilation of the blood vessels, and that's a thing that the endothelium governs. And also sodium loading impairs microvascular function. And this can be independent of any kind of noticeable change in blood pressure. So high sodium can also lead to something called left ventricular hypertrophy. And what that is enlargement of the muscle tissue that makes up the wall of the left ventricle. And the left ventricle is the powerhouse. That's the heart's main pumping chamber. And as the hypertrophy is a thickening of the walls of that chamber, and when that happens, those walls are less compliant and they get weak. They're unable to pump as forcefully, and high salt does that. But also, it hurts your kidneys. High sodium is associated with reduced renal function. And you might only see a minimal increase in blood pressure, but you're really stressing your kidneys. And also, sodium can affect the sympathetic nervous system, and that activates the fight or flight response. Chronically elevated dietary sodium may sensitize sympathetic neurons in the brain, so you have a greater response to a variety of stimuli, including skeletal muscle contraction. So even if your blood pressure is normal, chronically increased sympathetic nerve impulse can have harmful effect on target organs. So we need to just take a look at sodium intake. Taking the salt shaker off the table is a good way to start, but it's probably not enough because about 70% of the sodium in our diets comes from processed foods. And be careful when we eat out because restaurant food typically contains more salt than the dishes that we prepare at home. So eating out less can reduce salt intake, especially if when you are home, you use herbs and spices instead of salt to flavor the home-cooked meals. And be very, very careful for broths. If you use chicken broth in a lot of your recipes, get the lower sodium version of that. You're not really sacrificing flavor, but you will be saving quite a lot in terms of the added sodium. So salt affects your organs. Got to be very careful about that. So, have you heard of spirulina? I wanted to talk a little bit about spirulina today. I don't talk about it very often. It's incredibly good for you. It's loaded with nutrients. It grows in fresh and salt water. And spirulina is, it belongs to a category called cyanobacterium, blue-green algae. Just like plants, the algae can produce energy out of sunlight. It organizes and performs photosynthesis. It goes all the way back to the age of the Aztecs, but it became popular again, spirulina, when NASA decided to grow it in space and feed astronauts with it because it's so nutritive. It's full of nutrition. Typically, you take 1 to 3 grams a day, but some people take doses up to 10 grams. And it is green, very, very green. A tablespoon, 7 grams of spirulina powder has 4 grams of protein. It's rich in the B vitamins, thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin. It's got copper. It's got iron, it's got magnesium, potassium, manganese, and almost a full complement of nutrients, all types of nutrients that we need. It only has 20 calories. 7 grams of spirulina only has 20 calories, and it has a digestible, very complex carbohydrate, almost 2 grams. But remember, 4 grams of protein. So spirulina is very nicely balanced when it comes to a protein-carbohydrate balance. So it might be one of the most nutritious foods on the planet. It has very, very little fat, and it's got a nice balance of omega-6 and omega-3. When you think about the protein in spirulina, it's comparable to the quality of protein in eggs. It has all the essential amino acids that we need. It doesn't actually have B12, though. So if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, I always recommend that you incorporate a B12 supplement into your diet, because there is definitely nerve damage and cognitive impairment when you are deficient in B12. And you, that's just not something that you want to allow to happen to yourself. But spirulina is incredibly nutritious. It also is a powerful antioxidant and inflammatory. So there you go. And we know that oxidative damage harms our DNA, the genetic material, harms our cells. Oxidative damage drives chronic inflammation. Those two are always wrapped up together, oxidation and inflammation. And spirulina is a fantastic source of antioxidants that protect against oxidative damage. One is called phycocyanin. That's the compound that gives spirulina its blue-green color, cyan, if you're an artist. Phycocyanin fights free radicals. It inhibits the production of inflammatory signaling molecules. So it is the main active compound as an antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, the phycocyanin. And it's powerful. Spirulina, like the EPA that I talked about earlier, the EPA-only fish oil approach with elite EPA gems, spirulina can support that in lowering LDL and triglyceride levels. As we know, heart disease is still our biggest killer, and the measurable factors like cholesterol and triglycerides are something that we want to pay attention to. Spirulina, like the fish oils, can raise the HDL, good cholesterol. There was a study done in people with type 2 diabetes where 2 grams per day of spirulina significantly improved LDL, triglycerides, and boosted HDL. Another study with people that had high cholesterol found that 1 gram of spirulina daily lowered triglycerides by 16% and LDL by 10%. Higher doses seem to make more sense, though. That was an unusual finding. It's more typical to have those kinds of responses when people take between 4.5 and 8 grams a day. So again, back to that tablespoon of spirulina approach. Now, spirulina, like the EPA fish oil, protects LDL cholesterol from becoming oxidized. All the fatty structures in the body are very susceptible to oxidative damage. The name for that is lipid peroxidation, and it's a driver of many serious diseases. So one of the steps, for example, in the pathway to heart disease is LDL becoming oxidized. So lipid peroxidation is something we're concerned about. Spirulina is very protective against that. So is vitamin E. So is CoQ10. So is EPA fish oil. Just the fat-soluble antioxidants are the ones that are most protective against lipid peroxidation. Alpha-lipoic acid would need to be added to that group. They just as far as naming the ones that have that benefit. Any of them that you take are going to be beneficial. And so protecting against lipid peroxidation actually protects every cell membrane in your body, because all of our cell membranes are double layers of lipids. So we don't just think about the fat that's obviously fat in the body. Every one of your cells has a lipid bilayer membrane. And lipid peroxidation can be particularly damaging. Now, the other place where spirulina is going to play a protective role is in the eyes. The eyes are very sensitive to oxidative stress. So if you have macular degeneration or cataracts in the family, lutein, zeaxanthin, and spirulina are a very important combination for So think lutein with greens. That's what a supplement would be called. Carlson makes one. It's very protective for the eyes. Spirulina, very healthy food for you. This is Food for Thought. I'll be back after these messages.
Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gelatin capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today, or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D. Have you heard about Carlson Super 2 Daily? No doubt you've heard about the benefits of eating more fish, but most of us don't eat omega-3 rich fish every day. Carlson Super 2 Daily is like having a serving of light tuna when you take your multivitamin. Take your vitamins, minerals, and a dose of Heart Smart omega-3s all in one formula, 2 soft gels. Carlson Super 2 Daily. It's the perfect foundation for your supplement program. Carlson Super 2 Daily is a comprehensive, balanced formula supplying essential vitamins and minerals in just 2 easy-to-swallow soft gels. Plus, Carlson Super 2 Daily provides the omega-3s EPA and DHA to support the heart, nerves, brain, and the eyes. Purity, potency, and freshness are always guaranteed. Look for Carlson Super 2 Daily at finer health food stores today.
Welcome back. This is Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root. And there was a big study that was published this week in the Journal of Internal Medicine, JAMA, and it found something interesting about the diet that you might want to follow if you want to reduce your risk of colon cancer. And this was a very large study, and what they found, this was in Seventh-day Adventists, and there were 77,659 of them, so there were a lot of people in this study. What they found was that a plant-based diet with fish lowers the risk of colorectal cancers, and that the plant-based diet by itself didn't work as well as a plant-based diet that included seafood and fish. Now, vegetarians in many studies have been found to have a reduced risk of certain cancers of heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity, all things that we've talked about today. But this was new insight because they found that pesco-vegetarians, these are fish-eating vegetarians, so the only animal protein that they eat is fish and seafood, they had a significantly lower risk of colon cancer compared to straight vegetarians. That's interesting. And this group of people, the Seventh-day Adventists, actually encourage healthy lifestyle, and they encourage refraining from smoking and drinking. So they followed these 77,000-plus people for 7.5 years, and some of them did. They had a few cases of colon cancer and rectal cancer, but compared to regular meat eaters, the vegetarians were 22% less likely to have malignancies in the colon. But when people also ate fish at least once a month and kept their meat intake down to less than once a month, they had the biggest reduction in colon cancer. They had a reduction of 43%. The people who have eggs and dairy but didn't have fish or meat had an 18% reduction. So the fish eaters still are beating out the lacto-ovo vegetarians. And the vegans had the worst outcome of all. They only had a 16% reduction compared to meat eaters. So, pesco-vegetarianism. The comforting takeaway is a person doesn't need to be vegan and cut out all eggs, dairy, and fish to get benefit in terms of reducing risk of cancer. So, the reality is somewhere around 5% of people will be diagnosed with colon cancer at some point during their lifetime. It's not that it is a huge segment of the population. But if you adjust your diet to have primarily fruits and vegetables and seafood, it's much healthier. So it's not that you're committing suicide if you eat a cheeseburger, but it should be a treat, not a regular occurrence. That's the point to be made. And really, the number was less than once per month. So really, a very occasional consumption of red meat is what this study is pointing to, according to the National Cancer Institute. They were the ones that were really instrumental in publishing this in JAMA, the Journal of American Internal Medicine. So pesco-vegetarianism, interesting. And water. I want to talk a little bit about water. The importance of drinking water. We take it for granted, but being hydrated is crucial. The Institute of Medicine has a recommendation for water intake. Everybody says, 8 glasses a day. 8 ounce glasses. Institute of Medicine actually bumps that up for men. They're recommending fluid intake of around 3 liters per day, and for women, 2.2 liters. We know that the kidneys rely on adequate water intake. They don't get as much attention as the heart or the lungs, but they certainly, the kidneys, are responsible for many functions that keep the body as healthy as possible. And the kidneys flush the body from toxins, but water isn't needed just by the kidneys. It's needed by all the cells and organs in the body in order for our body to function properly. Water lubricates our joints. It protects the spinal cord and other sensitive tissues. It regulates body temperature. It assists the movement of food through the gut. And we can get some water from things like soup or from fruits and vegetables that contain a lot of water, but the majority of water is gained through drinking water and other beverages. And during our day, water is lost by the body. Sweating, obviously, urination, obviously, but even when we breathe, we're losing water. And water is just the best source of fluid for the body. We get some fluid from milk and juices, but we lose fluid balance from beverages that contain alcohol or caffeine. So soft drinks, coffee, beer, they're less than ideal because they have diuretic properties. So that what that means is they make the body lose or release water. So what the kidneys do, they're sort of bean-shaped and they're in the middle of the back and they hurt sometimes when we are not taking care of them. But we have two of them. In case if we lose one, we are still all right. When kidneys fail, we die within a matter of days. So the kidneys function to remove waste products and excessive fluid from the body, but they regulate the levels of salt. I was talking earlier about too much sodium. They regulate potassium. They regulate acid. And the kidneys produce hormones that influence the performance of other organs. So when we eat and drink, nutrients and minerals, vitamins enter the bloodstream in order to be carried around the body to be used for energy and growth and maintenance, repair of tissues. And the blood passes through the kidneys where it gets filtered and waste products are removed and sent to the bladder to be sent out of the body. Every day, the kidneys filter around 200 quarts of fluid, which is pretty amazing. Most of it is recovered by the body, but 2 quarts are removed from the body. And when we don't get adequate fluid, then the kidneys can't do their job. But we also get a buildup of things like waste products, bacteria, proteins, and that can lead to very dangerous infections, but also kidney stones, which are crazy painful. They just hurt so much. And if we don't drink enough, we also are prone to urinary tract infections. It's the second most common type of infection in the body. About 8 million healthcare visits every year are because of UTIs. And if those infections spread upward to the upper urinary tract, permanent kidney damage can happen. Kidney infections can be life-threatening. Septicemia can happen. So drinking more water is very important. We don't want dehydration. Another thing that happens is an imbalance in the body's electrolytes. We get an imbalance in things like potassium, phosphate, and sodium, which carry electrical signals between the cells. The kidneys keep electrolytes stable. So are we drinking enough water in the U.S.? It doesn't seem so. And Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in 2013 took a look at NCI, the National Cancer Institute survey from 2007. They found that 7% of adults in America reported no daily consumption of drinking water. None. So they're drinking something else. And the something else could be soda or it could be coffee. The most frequent thing was coffee all day long, which is a diuretic. So these people are certainly at risk. 36% of adults only had 1 to 3 cups of water per day. 35% had 4 to 7 cups, and 22% reported drinking 8 cups or more per day. Now, this is also assuming that these people are being honest with their responses. If that's true, just over half of adults are drinking between 4 and 8 cups of water per day, and only 1 in 5 were drinking 8 cups or more. So if people were not fruit and vegetable eaters, they were also not water drinkers. It's kind of interesting. But that 7% of people in America drink no water at all during the day is a troubling thing. And one of the things that we keep coming back to is this problem that we have in our culture of being overweight and obese. And water is one of the most significant and generally free tools that we have to correct that, because sometimes people who don't drink water throughout the day mistake thirst for hunger. And quite often when people are feeling, as friends of mine would say, a little peckish, like to go and have a little snack, drinking a glass of water satisfies that feeling. And drinking a glass of water before a meal, within that 30-minute period before you sit down for a meal, actually reduces the amount of food that you eat during that meal. So again, if you're looking to shed a few pounds, there are some little tricks that we nutritionists employ that don't involve drugs and don't involve starving yourself, but are just some very practical pieces of advice, like the alpha lipoic acid, 300 milligrams a day with at least 1,000 milligrams of EPA, but a glass of water before every meal. You might just find that the pounds drop off, and wouldn't that be nice? That's it for me this week. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back again next week with another edition of Food for Thought. In the meantime, stay healthy. Drink some water today. Have a great day. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Food for Thought with Jolie Root, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Tune in again next time as Jolie Root sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. Food for Thought, Fridays at 10 a.m. on 1160 WVNJ.